Meeting is now being recorded.
All right. So this is the afternoon session of the face-to-face meeting number 4 on 11 December 2018, and it's currently 10 minutes UTC. And I remind everyone that the call is recorded. And may I please remind you to state your name before speaking, and I will turn the call over to Alan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Alan Greenberg speaking. Volker and I worked over lunch, and we have a draft recommendation to replace CM.2. CM.2, you may recall, it was talking about the roughly what we guess were 180 million grandfathered domains, those that were not subject to the validation verification rules in the 2013 RAA. Those rules only apply to essentially to new domains or new registrations or those transferred in or otherwise had their contact information changed. And there was significant pushback in a number of quarters. And you will recall when we discussed it, Volker and I volunteered to try to draft something new, driven to some extent by the possibility that the EPDP might eliminate the admin field. Under the 2009 RAA, the contact of the registrant contact field, specifically email and telephone, were not mandatory, but the admin contact fields were. We might be in a situation where if the admin contact is eliminated, we have a situation where we have a domain with effectively no contact information at all. And this is looking at attempting that. And the recommendation that we are talking about reads, the ICANN board should initiate action intended to ensure that all GTLD domain name registrations, for all GTLD registrations, at least one full set of contact details as required for new registrations under the 2013 RAA or any subsequent version thereof, or applicable policies, and there needs to be some commas scattered throughout this sentence, must be collected or be present for either registrant or admin contact. The rationale is in light of the possibility that some contact fields may be eliminated or significantly reduced, a concrete risk exists that with regard to domain name registrations that do not meet the requirements of the 2013 RAA, i.e. grandfathered domains, no longer have one complete set of contact details associated with the registrant or representative, registrant or admin. In some cases, action should be undertaken to ensure the registrant or his representative remain contactable. Timeline, 4 calendar years or next renewal date, whichever is larger. And that the 4 obviously is subject to discussion. It's just there is a number to start with. So essentially we're saying that we want to make sure that there are no registrations that do not have contactability, that are not uncontactable, whether it's because of a UDRP or a registrar going bankrupt and the receiving registrar not having any contact information whatsoever. That I'm slightly uncomfortable with the wording of the recommendation in that the reference to the required for new registrations might be construed, despite the word all, that this only applies to new registrations. But I suspect my level of comfort will increase once we add a few commas. Open the floor. Volker, prime author.
And thank you. Volker speaking. Just to provide some more background, we looked at the original recommendation, and the first question was, and that was also the question that was raised by a lot of comments, what this is actually trying to fix. And the biggest issue that we could come up with was that with certain registrars eliminating the admin fee altogether and the APDP also discussing the elimination of the admin field, we might end up with a situation where we would not have any quick way to directly contact the registrar from sending a letter for certain registrations that predate the 2013 RAA, the so-called grandfathered domain names. We therefore thought about what might be appropriate, and we figured that ultimately we should ensure that either the registrant or his representative, the admin, in case the admin is not eliminated, should have some form of contact details available. This basically means, to interpret what the section actually is trying to do, if a domain name has a contactable admin, nothing needs to be done because it has the full contact details. However, if the admin field is eliminated either by the registrar because of their interpretation of applicable laws or by incoming policies or new contracts, then at least one contact field should remain as the full contact details as are required for new registrations under the RAA that is applicable at the time, which basically means if you have an old registration and you eliminate the admin detail and you have the registrant detail with incomplete details, then you better make sure that that registrant details, those registrant details are completed as soon as possible. And the timeline that was suggestion from Alan, I think we should be open to I leave it open for the implementation phase of this recommendation, but obviously I'm not refusing 4 years.
Thank you. Can I ask Jackie to make a note that it was something I was thinking of, and I never mentioned before, but it's particularly applicable in the somewhere around the introduction. When we talk about the EPDP, when we talk about GDPR, note that the final face-to-face meeting and decision-making of this group was in December. At that point, the EPDP had been meeting for N months and had issued an interim report. And to the extent that their deliberations so far impact our areas in our review, we are factoring those in. That needs to be reworded, but that goes along with our original decision that we are not ignoring the GDPR, but we're not trying to replace the other processes that are going on around us. Thank you. Comments on this discussion? Susan.
So things like we need to rework some of the basic language in the report in this section to lead it up to that. So I don't know who takes the lead on that.
I would suggest you take a highlighter to it, and if you want to do any wording, fine. Otherwise, at least highlight it for Jackie to make sure that when we get closer to the end, something has been adjusted by one of us.
Okay.
Same with Volker.
I mean, I posted it to the list, so everybody should have the language. And I think it's not the intention of that we are providing fully fleshed-out language over the course of the lunch break. This is a suggestion. This is an idea of how to address the comments and the issues that many had with the original recommendation by directly targeting the main problems that we were trying to fix. If any suggestions, then I think we should discuss that on the list and have it done by the time that we are ready to prepare a final version.
One note that when we were doing the draft report, there were a couple of places where it became obvious in the final editing that the wording of a recommendation really needed to be changed. We didn't change it because we had already taken the consent and we were not willing to reopen it. We, being Lisa and I, were not willing to reopen it at that point. I would like to establish the principle that if we find things comparable in this pass, that we do present it to the group, and we'll have a little bit more flexible time. But just to serve notice that yes, we will try to come to closure here, but it is subject to editing and readability. And my preference would be to reopen those and redo the consensus call or ask, is there anyone who changed their position because of the timing? In the case I was thinking of, there was really no change of intent, but the wording was really awkward. And so hopefully we can fix those with the agreement of the group. It's conceivable someone's position may change on the recommendation because of it, but I think that's something we'll have to handle. All of which says that there may be emails you have to pay attention to in the next month and a half. Any other comments on this one? Then let's go back to law enforcement and review for Catherine what we decided, and hopefully she will agree with everything I say with a smile on my face.
No, and I apologize. This is Catherine. I apologize for being back so late. I'm not the master of my own schedule, unfortunately.
No, I will try to remember what we did, but I won't. Rob, and I'm hoping Jackie and Nagar will be able to remind me. Now, we left off at the last comment on LE1, I think, when Catherine had to leave. I think there was one on the next page. Am I imagining it? Or next page. That's the one.
Yes.
Okay. All right. The first part of the comment is talking about why we should do studies of well-funded areas of internet business. And the security community that safeguards internet commerce. This recommendation is talking purely about law enforcement. So I don't think that is applicable.
Is it possible that this one refers to the next part where we propose to expand the reach to also include cybersecurity organizations?
It is certainly possible. We will address a similar concept there. Is there anything else I forgot about this one? In terms of the costs of the service, MSSI will attempt to give us a number of hours they put into it, but this survey was largely done on volunteer time. Have I missed anything that we need to report to Cassie?
No, Alan. You've summarized the two items. One was that the review team's response to the comment was you had concentrated on law enforcement because you were instructed by the bylaws to do so, and you intentionally decided to leave aside the consumer part of it, or the commerce part of the equation, I guess. And the second one was for MSSI to determine, if feasible, the number of hours spent to put together the survey on it.
Thank you. And in future ones, I'll let you report first because you actually have notes.
You did a great job.
Catherine, you're happy with that? Let's go on to LE2. Well, I'll start, but please don't wait for me to ask if I'm missing something. BC says they're basically supporting it. ALAC says support it. It's unclear. Oh, sorry, BC.
I was just going to say I'm happy to go over the notes we've taken so you don't have to think through what you guys decided before.
Okay, I'll just finish.
Sounds good.
You can go on. The ALAC said it's unclear how the surveys are going to lessen potential consequences. The answer is they'll provide information which ICANN may, if it is so empowered, take action on. If it's not empowered, then try to convince someone else to. Negra?
Thank you. On the I2C comment, they noted that the coalition makes the language of this recommendation quite vague and invites the review team to clarify which RDS and what regular basis mean and solicits additional input. So the response was the review team can define what RDS means in the document. Regular basis is our best attempt to identify a group of people often working with the law enforcement group but not on a formal basis. That's what we had captured in terms of our response. Any comments that you want to address? Okay, Catherine? Okay. Moving on to the non-commercial stakeholder group comment. If the law enforcement bodies wish to conduct surveys, ICANN should, within reason, cooperate. However, this recommendation should be reworded to clarify who pays for the research. Given the current state of flux in GDPR compliance, no action on surveys of law enforcement satisfaction should be taken until the state of registrant data access is stabilized. The response was we don't expect any action to be taken on this report until the beginning of 2020 at the earliest, given the board action and the implementation time needed. And we actually left it at that for this particular comment. Is there anything that you would like to add?
Yes, this is Catherine for the record. I mean, on those two, I think the one thing that I understand even the EPDP can sort of agree on is that at some point there should be legitimate access for law enforcement. So doing some evidence-based policymaking doesn't necessarily hurt. And that means that I think there should be openness to even consider this now. If you weigh this against the impact of designing something now that doesn't fit any needs later on, then arguably the cost is much greater. So I don't believe in not looking for evidence, and I would argue that this arguably should happen already now. I recognize that, of course, we're working within a very specific time frame, and this will still be useful for further iterations because I do think this will take us a long time to get right. So I think we should maybe add a little more explanation to the text that you have now suggested to put in response, which is that, of course, all of this is very far down the road. To say that evidence would be helpful even earlier, of course. And that's, I mean, the cost of this, once you have set up the survey itself was free to run, and the graphs are produced by the software, so the manpower in terms of analyzing it is not huge. And so, I don't think this is I think we should just add a little bit more on that. And when it's regular and so on, I mean, I'm happy to be more specific, but also want to make sure that it's proportionate, which is why we left a bit of flexibility there.
I have a question. I don't think we cover it anywhere, but I may be wrong. When you talk about law enforcement and access to data, the response from some people very often is they can always, law enforcement is special. They can get a subpoena. They can get any action, any data they want or need. That ignores the fact that there are time delays associated with that process, and historically, much access is not at the stage where they have the ability to get a subpoena, and the information has been useful prior to the formal law enforcement access to data, and I think we need to say that, that may or may not happen in the future. but I think we need to make it clear what the process is that all law enforcement access at this point to who we, prior to GDPR and who is, was not at the stage where subpoenas or a formal legal action could be taken. And I just want to make sure we're covering that somewhere in the dialogue if it's not already there. A note partially to Catherine and partially to Jackie. Catherine and then Volker. So Volker and then Catherine.
Yeah, I keep pointing back to due process for timelines, and I mean those process steps are there for a purpose. And I also think that many governments are cognizant of the problems with the current due process rules, with, as regards to, for example, international law enforcement access to data. And that's, for example, why the European Commission is currently working on the e-evidence regulations that would vastly streamline such processes. And I would recommend to all governments to engage in such processes that would streamline these access provisions, simply because they themselves are complaining that the mechanisms that they currently have put in place are not sufficient, and instead of asking contracted parties to circumvent those, they should make these processes better, as some governments are doing.
If I may make clear, I wasn't implying that we should give law enforcement full access to all data just because they happen to want it. Pointing out that the current processes, there are different levels of investigation that they have used in the past. May or may not be available in the future, but just pointing out that not all access to information by law enforcement is done through due process today. Or last year, whatever. Catherine?
Yes, this is Catherine. I mean, thanks, Volker, for the kind words about e-evidence, which is the reason why I'm late, because I'm in. That was never designed to be a solution for the whois. I mean, I know that the contracted parties are in there, but that's for billing information. I mean, you cannot move whois requests to mutual legal assistance or anything like it. And of course, e-evidence is within the union. It doesn't cover U.S. companies other than those targeting the union. And of course, that's
water to you.
Yeah, and it doesn't actually fix anything, and it wasn't designed to do that for whois, because we're dealing with situations where, but you know, I mean, on cybercrime, you have botnets that move command and control servers every 5 minutes. If you leave those investigations to be performed through mutual legal assistance, that's not going to fly, regardless of what laws we come up with. So we need to fix the system that we used to have, even if it's not openly available anymore. And but I think this is really a side fight, and that's one that the EPDP is engaging in. It's not something we can fix in this report, and I didn't aim to do so. I think the recommendations we put forward are extremely cautious in terms of not having any specific way forward. All they seek to do is to create an evidence base so that there can be evidence-based policymaking by others. And if that's deemed to be too costly, then I think the investment we make in non-evidence-based policymaking is much more of a risk than actually spending a little bit of money on surveys and studies. Thank you.
I don't think we want to be in the position of advocating non-evidence-based policymaking. Any further comments on this particular comment? Let's go on to the next.
We have two more comments on the next page that I'm bringing up.
Please.
Now. Oh.
I think we're on the right display.
That might help, right? The next comment is from the DNRC. They're suggesting the recommendation should be deleted as it is all untimely and has the potential to run roughshod over the PDP. It is also unclear whether other RDS users working with the law enforcement can legally access personal and sensitive domain name registration data under the GDPR. Issues connected to law enforcement access to RDS data, including gatekeeping questions of how law enforcement should be defined, should only be determined by the EPDP. The response that the review team came up with is that we're simply looking to understand the environment. We don't believe this recommendation runs roughshod over the EPDP. We are not proposing non-compliance with the law. We are proposing assessment of needs. And Stephanie actually provided us with additional comments that we're going to capture off the recording in response to this. Is there anything you would like to add to this, Catherine?
This is Catherine. No, I think it's extremely eloquent. I particularly like the roughshod part. Very nice. I can fully subscribe to that. And just to say, I mean, there is no interest for law enforcement to gather evidence in a way that's not compatible with the law, because it comes back to bite you when you go to court. I mean, you're not going to be able to get someone if you've taken action that is not within your remit. And so I think this point is a bit exaggerated sometimes, but happy with the response. And if I can add some of my extra pro-law enforcement flourishes, I'll be even happier. Thank you.
Stephanie had a rather eloquent one. I'm not sure if you can reproduce it now, but we said we'd capture it off of the recording. And lastly.
And the last comment is from the Registrar Stakeholders Group. RSG cautions against including parties who work with the law enforcement agencies in any survey or attempting to equate the needs of those who work with the law enforcement agencies to the actual needs of the law enforcement. The expansion of such a survey to third parties that have not been empowered by regulation or statute with legal enforcement or investigatory powers and legal rights is highly dubious, as the legitimacy of such parties is not equal to that of the law enforcement agencies, even though they may provide useful services. And our response has been, the intent was to, quote, extend content of surveys and studies, but not the pool of the survey takers.
Content, I thought concept.
Yes, apologies. We miswrote that. The intent was to extend concept of surveys and studies, not the pool of the survey takers. Catherine, to clarify intent, so this comes squarely back to you, Catherine, for input, please.
Yes, thank you. This is Catherine. So I think at the time we discussed that there are two sets of cybersecurity players, which are, I would say, equally important. One is the public sector. So we have a number of, for example, computer emergency response teams that are set up as public entities that are not generating a profit off their activities, but, for example, are supporting government agencies and others with cybersecurity needs. Then there are some mixed entities that are public-private partnerships usually, and then there are the private cybersecurity companies. It is, of course, not always easy to delineate who's working just for their own profit and who's working for the benefit of the community. But at the same time, at least from the law enforcement perspective, anybody who contributes to cyber hygiene is necessary and is a welcome player in terms of trying to already combat things on the cybersecurity side before it gets to the law enforcement side. So that's why, at least that was the rationale that I remember that led us to add language, which I must say is extremely cautious even in the recommendation, where we said it doesn't quite have to be that they have a statutory role, but there needs to be a connection to law enforcement. I remember Stephanie and I worked a while on coming up wording, and I think we should stand by that wording because it does try to balance these interests and it does try to create a sort of cutoff point between entities that work with law enforcement on a regular basis and entities that may just be out to generate their own profit, even though, incidentally, they might contribute to cybersecurity.
Thank you. I've never heard the term cyber hygiene before. I like it. What we realized in looking at this comment was not an issue with the last part of the sentence, but with the first part where it says we should consider extending and conducting such surveys. And that was read to say we should take the same surveys and send them to the non-law enforcement people and apply the same studies. And I think the intent was that we should conduct surveys and studies of those working with law enforcement, not necessarily the same questions and the same intent. And their concern was we were treating them as law enforcement, whereas instead they are important players in the process, and we should not ignore them. So the suggestion was we reword the first part of the sentence to not imply that we're talking about the exact same survey documents or study documents.
Right. This is Catherine. I guess I had a different interpretation of the comments, which didn't necessarily just consist in thinking that they were opposed to using the same questions. I understand that there's a general issue with even expanding the surveys per se, regardless of what we ask. So maybe there's a way of addressing both points by also addressing the second one, which is that we actually did work on carefully limiting the scope of actors who we think should be surveyed, but I think we should stick to that careful extension and maybe also explain that if that's...
I think, and that was the reason I said somewhere we need a bit of description saying there are different players in the field that have different roles, but they work together. I think we're done. I think this is the last one. Back to the normal program. Where are we? Consumer trust.
I think you already did. You
didn't? Yeah.
You guys are done. It's time to go home.
So at this stage, Alan, either we continue with what we had tomorrow morning. Which is
a quarter to three. There's no way we can let these people out at this point.
Well, of course you can. Well, I would prefer to power through and then go home early tomorrow.
I support that strongly.
Okay, we move to safeguarding register, and I can buy those afterwards.
There is a fair amount of work that still has to be done by a few of us. So, I hope we'll still be finished early today, and get some of that work done.
So welcome everyone to face-to-face meeting number day three. Objective five. Sure.
can we leave the zoo for now and go back to
Jean-Baptiste, this is the zoo.
No worries. So I'm moving on to Objective 5, safeguarding data, and starting with the public comments on the section itself from the RRSG. They have no issue with the requirements, with the assumption that any update of the contracts will not be extended to anything outside of them. Such requirements should be general, not specific, and merely reference best practice legal regulations, such as the GDPR.
Let's go back and say what the recommendation was. I can read it if you want.
No, I can read it. Don't worry. The ICANN board should require that the ICANN organization, in consultation with data security and privacy experts, ensure that all contracts with contracted parties, to include privacy proxy services when such contract exists, include uniform and strong requirements for the protection of registrant data and for ICANN to be notified in the event of any data breach. The data security experts should also consider and advise on what level or magnitude of breach warrants such notification. In carrying out this review, the data security privacy experts should consider to what extent GDPR regulations, which many but not all ICANN contracted parties are subject to, could or should be used as a basis for ICANN requirements. The ICANN board must either negotiate appropriate contractual changes or initiate a GNSO PDP to consider effecting such changes.
Yeah.
Before we go to the recommendation, just one comment for change. I think we should not have the ICANN board negotiating, but rather direct ICANN staff to negotiate.
We're going to catch all of those. Now, alternately, we could use the wording that Volker used in the replacement CM2 of the ICANN board should, whatever it said, ensure attempting or...
No, because in that, the ICANN board could also take action by commending to the EPDP or any working group that this is overlooked.
Okay.
So it's not direction to staff. This is, in the CM2, it's more general.
Okay. We'll correct all of the wording where we instruct the board to do something. And if we can use cleaner words, we will. And I will point out that the GDPR contains requirements that are comparable to these. So chances are, in satisfying the GDPR, we will in fact have met pretty much all of the requirements that are within this requirement, except possibly the reporting to ICANN. That may depend on controller relationships and things like that. Jean-Baptiste, back to you.
This recommendation, there were three supporting comments from RRSG, LYSG, and ALAC. And then the two following comments, first one from the Internet Infrastructure Coalition, where they have concern about making sure contracts of contracted parties should be aligned with each other when it comes to requirements of user data security, noting this requirement should be strengthened and ICANN should have a right to be notified of. They would like to see this move towards having both ICANN and GDPR compliant contracts.
So I think the first part is basically agreeing with us. And this, GDPR compliant contracts are, I hope, a gift, certainly those who are subject to GDPR. I'm not quite sure what ICANN compliant contracts are. I mean, How can ICANN have a contract which is not compliant with its own policies? Does that make any sense? If, please use your microphone.
I'm surmising that what they mean is that they have been in compliance with existing contracts. That is the RAA contracts and the RA contracts. I think that's the reference, clear reference to those contracts. And so it's saying that they should make sure that they're compliant. In other words, enforcement is a issue. I think that's what they're pointing out.
Yeah.
That isn't the contract not being compliant. That's
what I meant to say. Enforcement. Lax enforcement.
Okay. Then I guess our answer is we support compliance with law and support with compliance with ICANN contracts.
You said in the answer to the earlier question,
yeah.
you also pointed out that if the ICANN is going to be GDPR compliant anyways, then all of those contracts would follow.
Well, in theory, we could have non-GDPR compliant contracts with non-GDPR subject parties, but
in this context,
there's no, you know. I think we're okay. I think we'll have a simple, clean answer for this thing. You know, thank you, and we agree.
Next one is from Business Constituency. While there has been a significant and useful focus at ICANN on registrar data privacy over the last several months, it remains unclear whether registrars and registries are adequately protecting registrar data, example given from data breaches. ICANN's contracts with registries, registrars, and escrow agents include varying requirements for how data is to be protected from inappropriate access or change. We have limited transparency, however, on whether and how well these contracts are being enforced. For example, there is a contractual requirement that ICANN be notified in case of a data breach, but it's unclear whether and to what effect been enforced. We suggest this is an area for the team for further consideration.
Well, we are requiring, we are specifying that we believe we must be notified of data breach. And we are saying use reasonable industry standards in protecting data and stuff like that. We this review team are saying. Oh, sorry, ICANN.org. Or me personally, I want an email. I can add you to the list if you'd like. The part that we are not saying is public disclosure of the details or the statistics. You know, that escrow agents have been subject to 493 breaches or registrars or whatever. Or go to the extent of documenting them, which law requires in some jurisdictions anyway, and public companies often have to publish because of liabilities and, you know, stockholder implications. Do we want to make any reference to disclosure of information related to breaches in our recommendation? Disclosure to the public. Disclosure to the public by ICANN. Erica?
Erica Mann. Ellen, I would be surprised if ICANN would not have to do this anyhow, because I believe there are laws in most countries in place which would request ICANN to notify data breaches, at least major data breaches.
I'm not talking about notifying the person, the entities whose data is breached. I'm just saying a public disclosure of the kind, you know, either on a detailed basis or a statistical basis of what has been reported to it. Whether it is obliged to notify the data subjects would be a really interesting thing to have that data of who they are, but ignoring that part for the moment.
Yeah.
I think, Stephanie, go ahead.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, this is a good example of where ICANN will have to modify its contracts in order to be in compliance with GDPR, because at the moment there's no obligation that I can see in those contracts, in the escrow contract, anybody to notify the individuals, and it is not the registrars that are in control of that contract. It is ICANN, I would argue. So therefore, they have to either figure out a way to notify the registrants or figure out a way of transferring that responsibility to somebody. So maybe it is the escrow agents that have to do it, which would be logical, but that's not usually the way that you do these processor. No, you don't. You can't really download it on the processor. So that contract will have to be changed, in my view, anyway.
That's a GDPR issue, and we're saying they must notify us, you know, as someone they have a contract with or a relationship with. The notification of the registrant, you know, is subject to the laws that are applicable in their jurisdictions, I would think, or in our jurisdictions if we have to force it upon them. But the question here is, I was asking, is do we want any issue of ICANN issuing public? Pardon me? Yeah. Yeah. You know.
I leave it to the security wonks as to whether that's a great idea, you know? Yeah?
Sorry?
Yes, Carlton. If you escrow contacts, there is requirement for data breach notification to ICANN.
Yeah, only the escrow. The others do
only
not.
In the escrow.
Yeah, that's what we report.
So what you're saying, Alan, is that the recommendation is whether or not then there should be an obligation for ICANN itself to publicly disclose that which comes from its contracted parties. And context, I agree with Stephanie, that maybe as a best practice that we could recommend that they do public disclosure of what those parties tell them.
Simply saying public disclosure makes it unclear whether ICANN reports that, you know, 7 registrars reported breaches in 2018, or whether we say on December 31st, VeriSign reported a breach of 14 million records. Those are two very different things. Okay, and I'm not sure we are either knowledgeable, and there are potential hazards associated with disclosure of some things. And I would suggest we might want to add that the ICANN board consider whether public notice should be given regarding breaches that it has been informed of, and leave it completely. And the board, in its wisdom, will consider whether to do it and at what level. Hey, we just said the board had wisdom. You should at least nod. Agreement to add that the board should consider? Anyone disagree? the board in its wisdom.
Let's get that concept of wisdom in the report.
Stephanie, you look unhappy about it, but I'm not sure.
Unhappy?
Yeah.
No?
Okay. Okay. All right, if we can record that. So the board should consider whether and to what extent notifications it receives of breaches should be made public. Do we have anything else? And that is in response to it is unclear whether and to what extent this has been enforced. Are there any more on SG1?
No.
Let us go on to BY1.
All right, we're now on recommendation BY1. The ICANN board should take action to eliminate the reference to safeguarding registrant data in bylaw section 4.6E2 and replace section 4.6E3 of the ICANN bylaws with a more generic requirement for RDS who is review teams to assess how well RDS who is policy and practice addresses applicable data protection and cross-border data transfer regulations, law, and best practices. So here we have several supporting comments.
Before we talk about the details, several of the negative comments are removal of the word safeguard registrant data, and our intent was we replaced it with applicable data protection and cross-border regulations, laws, and best practices. And we presumed that safeguarding registrant data was implied in that. Several people took great umbrage, I think is the right word, of us omitting those words, implying we no longer considered safeguarding registrant data relevant. And I will propose that we amend the recommendation to include those explicit words to make clear that we were not omitting them. We were just omitting them as a separate action of future review teams so that we incorporate the term safeguarding registrant data into the last half of the recommendation. And I'm stating that ahead of time because it will come up in several of the recommendations. So I'm not proposing wording right now, but I will some. Let's go back to the schedule program.
Yep. So there are four supporting comments and two disagreements. So first one is from I2C, where they support the idea of updating the bylaws but want to ensure up-to-date and effective data safeguards are part of that discussion. Second one is from the RRSG, where they take no issue with the bylaws being updated. However, it should be ensured that the data safeguards remain part of the language. Third one is from RYSG, supports the second part of recommendation BY.1 to replace section 4.6E3 of the ICANN bylaws, but does not support the first part of this recommendation to eliminate the reference to safeguarding registrant data in ICANN bylaws 4.6E2. And finally, ALAC supports recommendation.
I think those are all addressed by change I'm suggesting.
All right, and two disagreeing ones. First one from the DNRC, concerned about the deletion of protections for registrants from new ICANN bylaw section 4.6E2, and asked that this recommendation be removed as they consider it dangerous and short-sighted, as removing or changing this bylaw protection would violate key promises made in the ICANN transition and fundamental the DNS.
Okay. With the change that we're suggesting, what we are doing is omitting reference to the OECD guidelines and replacing it with applicable data protection cross-border transfer regulations, laws, and best practices. And we will put back the reference, explicit wording of safeguarding registrant data, and I think we're addressing this. Stephanie looks concerned.
No, that's exactly what it is.
All right. Next and final comment is from NCSG. We understand from examining the discussion on page 129 that the goal behind this recommendation was to eliminate reference to the OECD guidelines and to replace it with reference to data protection law and best practice with a view to compliance. But as currently worded, the recommendation does not do this. It sounds like the team is recommending the elimination of the reference registration data and I can buy law section 4.6E2. If this is not indeed the intention, the recommendation must be rewarded to precisely state its intention.
Done. All we have to do is figure out the rewording.
So that's it for section on BY.1.
Who is going to be the pen holder to reword the recommendation so we can capture that, please?
Do we have a volunteer? I think Carlton just volunteered. No. Or my phone's going to ring again. All right. It is 3 o'clock. Yes. Sorry. Please go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that I also reported in the slide deck a general comment on the draft reports from Domain Name Rights Coalition. If you wish, I can.
Oh yes, please. Read.
That's the last thing that you have to read. All right. The following. They asked that the review team acknowledge the many deep and lengthy concerns raised by members of the ICANN community on the EWG report, where new sections were first introduced in the final report without public input and without factoring into compliance with the GDPR. They also ask that the final report highlights more strongly the important role of domain name registrants and highlight their rights as protected data subjects in the DNS. The coalition strongly opposes with recommendations potentially calling for mass takedowns of domain names, to ask that the final report reflects more of the history of the WHOIS databases and the robustness of the debate that has taken place throughout the history of ICANN.
Let's deal with this one by one. References to the deep and lengthy concerns raised by members of the ICANN community on the EWG report, where new sections were first introduced in the final report without public input and without factoring in compliance with GDPR. To what extent is this within our mandate?
Kathy hated EWG.
in the report. See if that satisfies her. It's nonsense.
Microphones.
I am just trying to figure out what this means, because A, report, B, I can't recall, since I spent a lot of time in that, I can't recall any final section written in that was not in, that was not a response to comments and was not included, at least the idea was not included in the first report. I cannot recall that.
That was her.
Oh, you were there, Susan. Can you recall?
Yeah, that was her impression that we had, because it, we went from sort of one concept in the report, issued a draft report, or at least questions for comments. I can't remember the exact pattern either, but, you know, it was sort of fairly at the, in the last 3 months of all our deliberations that we went to the point of contact strategy in the report, and
yes,
she objected to that.
But
I just don't think there's any relevance. If she wants to make a big deal about the EWG report now, she can do that in her own comments like she's done, but I don't think there's any reason that this review team would go back and... It's just not relevant.
We did not start with EWG here.
We could have put within our terms of reference a review of the EWG process, which came out came as a result of the first Who Is review team.
Right.
We could have, but
yes,
we didn't.
We didn't.
And I'm not sure if we were to now go into a what might amount to a diatribe on the EWG, people would accuse us of doing exactly what she's worried about in our report. So I can't see suddenly introducing a section on the EWG. Yeah, I can't. I think our response to that part is it was not within our terms of reference, and we do not believe it would be appropriate for us to start commenting on the EWG. That it could have been something within our terms of reference. It was not mentioned at the time. It was not agreed to by this review team, and we don't believe we should begin that now. Next part.
Sorry, Alan, if I can just complete to that. I don't know if you recall that like in 63, but I think that was a concern that she had, that she was scared that some new sections would be introduced into the final report that were never submitted for public comments or something like that, if you recall.
At this point, I don't believe we are introducing any new sections. We are rewording some recommendations.
Yes, this is Catherine, but in adding something like she suggests, we would be doing precisely what she has criticized elsewhere, namely adding sections that we have not addressed previously, so I really do not think this is a good idea.
No, we're agreeing. I think we just said we would be doing exactly the same thing, and it just wasn't within, it wasn't even within our terms of reference to talk about it, and that was published almost exactly a year ago, and there could well have been comments on the terms of reference, but we didn't receive any. So I don't think we can act on that first one.
Can I say that if what might be the objective here is that second sentence in the second paragraph, coalition strongly opposes with the committee's potentially calling for mass takedown of domain names. We don't have any recommendations that even go close to that.
Yeah, we addressed that.
We've already addressed that in her particular comment, because the reference to mass takedowns was there. I can't at this point remember which recommendation it was. There was one, it certainly may have been in relation to CM2, which we're talking about in a different way right now.
Claim to understand the DNRC comment in any depth. It confused me totally on several fronts. The mass takedown, the only mass takedown that I think she could possibly be referring to is the takedowns that happened in response to the RDS to RAA 2013 accuracy requirements. That prompted mass takedowns, but how does that relate to this? I don't know, you know. In terms of dragging the EWG report in here, theoretically you could say in the section where we say that the board acted on this, this, and this, and, you know, remember, I can't remember which recommendation it was from the WHOIS 1 report. But we said, yes, the board studied this and recommended, struck the EWG, took the report, and that report then went into the RDS working group. You know, you might comment into that, see it, and say, we hated the EWG report because she did. That might be logical, but it doesn't make much sense here. So...
I have no doubt we referred to the EWG report, and if we didn't, we could. But an analysis of the EWG report and the process they followed is out of scope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It could have been in scope should we decided to, since it was a fallout of the RDA of the first WHIS review team. But
and I can't believe she'd want us to. Doing it, and I would have been screaming, what a waste of time, because really, we got EDPS. We don't need to triplicate EP. Whatever, that thing we got, yeah.
Stephanie, aim your microphone closer at your mouth.
Yeah.
No, aim your microphone.
Sorry.
No,
sorry.
You don't have to just aim the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay, so the EWG we could have, we didn't. It's too late now, because otherwise we would be accused of adding things at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so the second part of it now.
I would call that
the mass takedowns. It was referenced in one other place. It may have been the CM2 where we said you have to add. If you say you have to do something like add contact information, the accuracy rules that were applied in the RAA said you must do something, and if they don't respond within 30 days, you must put the domain on hold or something like that. So I'm not quite sure that's a takedown, but that's the term used. Clearly, if we are making a recommendation like that, one could apply different rules to it. You know, historically, on domain expiration, the PDP recommended, that is, stop the domain from working. And it turned out that's the only effective way of waking up a registrant who doesn't know what's going on and has been appreciated. It's all in the implementation. And I don't think we are advocating mass takedowns. A really bad implementation of something we say might result in it, but that's a really bad implementation. So, and you know, as per the I'm not quite sure that's mass takedowns. Okay, more strongly. Okay, also reflect the final report reflects the history of who is databases and the robustness of the debate that has taken place through history. That's an interesting question. I was told at one point that executive summaries should stand on their own. That is, someone should be able to go into an executive summary and find out what this is about without having a lot of history. So I put a fair amount of history in, and then a number of people commented saying, do we need to recount the history or presume that someone who is foolish enough to read an RDS Who Is review team has some knowledge of the background in history? I'm asking for opinions because we can go either way at this point. Catherine.
Yes, thank you. This is Catherine. I would suggest that we simply reference the ICANN website because by now there is a pretty comprehensive history of the Who Is on the Who Is section, and then the entire data protection saga can be followed on the data protection privacy part of the site. So maybe we can just say we refrain from re-explaining the whole history here, but for everyone who is interested, here are the links to the relevant parts of the ICANN website where this is explained in more detail.
I actually found some of that recently. It's quite interesting. Erica, you were going to say something?
Ellen, it's Erica. I'm not so sure if this helps because most of the stuff I found is not really helpful. So you are saying you found something helpful.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Let's come to the point. If we can find something good to point to, we will.
Yes.
If we cannot find something good to point to, do we recount the report? Do we build our own history? Or do we assume that people have some vague idea of what happened before?
Might I suggest that you don't write this history? I think you can link to an appropriate part of the ICANN website and go from there.
Yeah.
And I think you have covered a fair amount of it in your executive summary as well. And then again in the review background.
My take is if we try to write a history, we will write it as a balanced history from someone's point of view, and no matter who likes it, someone else will hate it. And I don't see any need to tread on that ground. Erica?
I wanted to say the same. It's good. We might want to review maybe the introduction. Maybe there's certain points where we, you want to be a little bit more explicit, but that's all I would do.
Okay. Done. Anything else? Are you folks in a position to review what it is we have decided and what still needs to be done going forward other than what was formally on our agenda tomorrow?
Okay, let me try to do that, starting with the first item we had on the agenda today, which was single Who Is policy. So on that, Jackie will work with Ellen to mention the problems of the policy development process regarding RDS Who Is to be placed in the executive summary. Under common interface, so there are comments that will need to be that's where updates in the public comment summary will be added. But no action item on the review team on that. Internationalize domain names. The review team will review this section and recommendation and decide if changes are needed. Review team will need to evaluate the recommendation.
Remind me what the RDN part was. You said we'll review and decide if changes are needed.
For the IDN section.
Dimitri is looking as confused as I am. So I'm having trouble remembering exactly why we're reviewing it. What are we looking for?
If I NAGAR for the record. Based on some of the comments provided by the community, nothing was controversial or questionable. There was just a general statement made that Dimitri and the rest of the review team were going to just read the section to make sure it's quite clear and decide if they want to clarify it some more. But there was no particular need for that. It was just something you wanted to do as part of reviewing that section.
Okay, we will, although I don't remember why. Thank you. Please go ahead.
And also on that, review team to evaluate the recommendation numbering and include a potential explanation in the executive summary. All right. Then on recommendation 1516, plan and annual reports, on recommendation 15.1, add a comment that ICANN needs to focus more on ensuring the recommendation is implemented.
Jackie will be doing that as a first cut. That's a question. I'm not.
Yeah, no. We're under a plan and annual report.
Yeah, let me can do that and then ask for clarification if we don't have all the data.
Yeah. The other one was to add something focusing, consider to what extent implementation is meeting the intent and was effective. Then we have Stephanie to work with Jackie to modify the recommendation language. Immediate suggestion to mention language impact evolution.
Excuse me, this is Jackie. Is that third option with Stephanie related to the first one? Okay, so it's just a reiteration of that?
That is correct. Those comments are applied to recommendation 15.1.
All right. That leaves us to anything new. There were no there. Law enforcement needs. So for LE.1, MSSI will estimate a number of hours spent on the law enforcement survey in response to the NCSG request for estimated cost associated with conducting the survey. For law enforcement, point two, in response to NCSG comments, a clause will be added factoring cost and benefits analysis and also reward recommendation to define what extent means. The suggested text, the ICANN board should consider extending and that's where is the new text, should consider to extend comparable surveys and or studies to other RDS with users working with law enforcement on a regular basis. That was what Volker, I believe, had suggested. And then in terms of action items, I think that's it for these two recommendations. On consumer trust, there was a decision to... there was no change to recommendation.
Erica, but to rewrite major parts. This was what we discussed in the morning, and Ellen and I will be working on it.
Okay. Thank you. Then on reporting registrant data, so there was an action item, an agreement to add ICANN board should consider whether and to what extent notifications of breaches should be publicly disclosed. For ICANN bylaws, the recommendation will be amended to incorporate the words safeguarding the registrant data and provide clarification that the suggestion is meant to postpone the topic to future reviews. And Carlton will reward recommendation. And finally, on the general comment on draft report, so the action item was to suggest linking to the story of WIS on the ICANN website and review the introduction.
And I have on my list on CM1 and perhaps other places the board should negotiate to reword that to be applicable, correct language. on CM3, we're dropping CM3, I believe, and I will put reference to the Global South in the outreach recommendation. And on CM4, I'm supposed to write to the ICANN organization, and again, I can't remember what I'm writing. Remind me, and I'll try to write it down this time so I'll remember.
We can send you the notes. The idea was to contact compliance and negotiate a language, clarifying language, to be added to one of the compliance pages so that the recommendation itself could be deleted.
Okay, got it now. So if I can find out where it is again, I'll suggest to be put somewhere else also. Got it. And Erica.
Yes, to the discussion we just had. Language which would justify a link to the who is relevant data, and actually it is. It's just a little bit confusing, so we will get the... It will provide you with some ideas how to frame it and how to make the link. Because the history of who is actually is quite comprehensive. And at the very end, although it ends in 2017, July 2017, to the very end, there is a sentence and which says, to learn more, see what's on the horizon, and the link to what's on the horizon is a link to the current process, including the EDP discussions. So it's pretty good. The link is just bad. Yeah, but the trouble is you will not find it if you have no clue where to look for it, because it doesn't show up on the front page. It's missing there. And it just shows up at the end, just above where it says last update, July 2017. Of course, it's not an update in 2017, but at least the link to what's on the horizon was done in May 2018. So it's very confusing. But we can, I think, explain this, and then you can
check. But we have something to point to.
It's good, yeah. Good. Yeah, it's quite well done.
Tomorrow we have an item to look at the executive summary, and I think we're going to have Jackie can lead us through it, show us what's there, and try to get a feeling for what we need, how we need needs to be dropped, what needs to be emphasized. The overall structure of the report Jackie talked about a little bit at the beginning. Several people weren't here, and maybe we want to review that, plus it may be slightly different because of what we've talked about since. So I think we want to come to an agreement of roughly what the report will be looking like, and get everyone to buy in on that. And we then also need to review, have the recommendations, to the extent we have them at time, display them one by one and look to do a consensus call to see if we have general agreement. Now, as noted, those may still change, and there may be one or two that are not quite firm, but to the extent possible, we'd like to see to what extent do we have unanimous consensus or partial consensus, and then review everything going forward. Nagar?
Thank you, Alan. I wanted to add a possibility for tomorrow. We are anticipating to send that operational input I had referenced earlier to the review team before end of today, and by that I mean 11:59 p.m. today, not like 4 p.m., or tomorrow morning. And if possible, that would be a good time since everyone's here to go over those comments. I suspect that with a lot of the changes that the review team has discussed over the past couple of days, some of those items would have already been addressed, so hopefully we'll be able to knock them off the list, and then if there's anything else either if you have questions that you ask our team, we can take them back with us, or we can just look to see how we can address them and close them off.
I would suggest that we do that as early as possible. That is, if we, assuming we have them when we convene, start. I would like to suggest that I don't think we have a full day's work at this point, unless there are unforeseen things coming out of this. I would suggest we start an hour later if we can do that. Is that a major problem with breakfast?
Sorry, you don't think that we have a full day's worth of work tomorrow?
Well, if you think we do, then we'll start at 9. Otherwise, we can start a little bit later. Sorry, I can't hear you.
I think I still got some, like, one action item to work on. It's about the recommendation 5.1, the data accuracy. So based on the discussion we had yesterday, we agreed to rewording the recommendation or got some replacement.
Are you planning to have something for us to look at tomorrow morning? Or are you looking to work with someone on that?
I think Catherine made a very good point yesterday. She suggested we would rather not focus on the process. Maybe we can replace that recommendation with a general one. So, like, I couldn't remember who suggested that we should maintain the ARS or other, like, measures yet to be maintained to focus on the data quality.
Okay, that's the 5.1 is the ARS one. I think, among other things, we said that we believe the ARS must continue. And remember, we don't know if the ARS is going to continue because of the of EPDP, but I think the general feeling in this group is something comparable to the ARS must continue. Catherine, please go ahead.
This is Catherine, just to support Lily's point. I think what we had discussed yesterday, and I think you're both agreeing, is that while the new system for quality of data might not necessarily be called ARS or be the ARS process, there might be something new that is designed to ensure data quality in the future. We wanted to abstract a little bit from our very specific recommendation and add some language that opens up this recommendation to also cover whichever process might come to replace the ARS. So that there's clarity that we're not just, that our recommendation doesn't just fall once ARS is replaced, if that happens, but rather that it still stands as a general recommendation concerning data quality. I think that was the gist of it.
Okay, and you were going to make reference to some of the EPDP, some of the GDPR requirements related to accuracy also, I believe, the obligation that we have to ensure accuracy. Maybe not in the recommendation, but in the preamble. The two of you likely to get together to do that.
Well, this is Catherine. If we have more time this afternoon, I can propose something for tomorrow morning, and I'll send something to Lily for review, and then we can discuss it tomorrow morning. But that being said, I mean, I do agree with you that if we all have time now to take care of our various action items, even that will probably not leave us with a full day of work tomorrow, and depending on how many comments Negara's team still has, that probably doesn't, I mean, sort of how much time you would need.
I retract my suggestion to start late. We'll start on time at 9 o'clock, and if we leave early, we leave early. And at this point, it is not even, just barely 3:30, so there is an opportunity now for if people want to work in small groups, that we can carry. Yes, Susan.
Susan, for the record, Stephanie was not here when we did data accuracy, so we could review that again really quickly if that's something you would like to look at.
Do we want to go back to the data accuracy discussion then? Well, hold on. One moment. It's break time. If we're going to continue working afterwards and there's a few more things to do, let's take a short break. We're going to be finished by then. I'm only the chair. I have no authority. We're reviewing the data accuracy section for Stephanie's benefit.
So we'll review the comments that were received on the accuracy, starting with comments on the section. And the first comment was from the RRSG, where they remind ICANN that data accuracy is achieved by providing our customers the tools right to access, correct, and/or update their information, and by establishing internal processes and procedures that ensure the data provided by our customers remain accurate and complete. Article 5.1d of the GDPR does not require we poll our customers to ensure the data they have provided them of the underlying transaction was in fact accurate. Any suggestion to the contrary is a misinterpretation of the GDPR. Furthermore, since the signing of the 2014 RAA, sections 1A to D as well as 1F of the WHOIS accuracy program specification have been implemented. Implementation of this five section has resulted in near perfect address accuracy and contactability rates. As of January 2018, postal address operability is 99% and postal accuracy is 88%, up from 80% 3 years earlier. ICANN's own key findings include that nearly all WHOIS records contain information that could be used to establish immediate contact. In 98% of records, at least one email or phone number met all operability requirements of the 2009 RAA.
And our comments were?
Our comment to Registrar Stakeholders Group was that we will be reviewing this section of the report and we will consider rewarding as needed. Catherine was to help provide Jackie with the correct references, which will also be included when we're reporting the public comment section as to how we are addressing it.
Certainly part of it is that their statement that data is provided by the registrant for, you know, to their satisfaction. The GDPR, among other things, requires the data be accurate for the purposes for which it's collected, and we have data that is that it has purposes associated other than for the registrant itself. We are going to review it. The numbers that they're quoted did not sound right to some of us, and we need to review the specific ARS reports which these ostensibly come from and verify whether that these numbers don't mesh with the accuracy numbers that we've seen. So we need to find out where they came from, which we think are ARS reports, and follow up on it. We are I think we have basically decided that the ARS recommendation that we had there, which was questioning why the correction rates were so high, is going to be replaced by another statement requiring that we maintain a watch on accuracy issues, whether it is the ARS or something else. But ICANN has an obligation to maintain accuracy and monitor accuracy. I think that was the general consensus. I don't have notes on it, but that was, I believe, the direction we were going. Yes.
Constituency, the TEM spec allows reduction without consideration of data subject, CEO or not, or legal entity. The contracted parties claim that they cannot reliably make these distinctions because the data is inaccurate. The convenient solution, redact everything, is over-prescriptive, the long-term solution that is most beneficial for all parties, and one that we recommend the team emphasize, lies in improving data accuracy to the level where contracted parties can be confident when making data subject or legal entity natural person distinctions. And here the comment was marked as noted, and you'll make reference to GDP.
I think the reference to the EPDP is we are not in a position to dictate what the EPDP says. I don't think we commented explicitly on their statement that of the potential conflict between registrar saying the data is accurate and the data is inaccurate, not accurate enough to trust it. Nor am I sure we should make a comment to that effect.
Data can be good enough for one purpose, but not good.
We said we are not. We are withdrawing the recommendation as it was presented,
right.
And we will be redrafting a new recommendation,
which only says improve accuracy around.
Well, improve and monitor
and monitor. Right.
I believe the recommendation that came out of RDS1, which said improve accuracy and
mm-hmm.
and gave some what I perceive as some ridiculous targets. Like 25% improvement every 6 months, was basically rejected by ICANN.org, and instead they came up with the accuracy reporting system so at least we could monitor what was going on and perhaps be able to take remedial action results. Okay. We are reiterating
that is
not that we have to improve accuracy at 25% per 6 months, but we must continue to monitor it
yeah.
and presumably take appropriate action, but that's out of our hands.
Yeah, so we just take steps. Continuous improvement and monitoring.
Yeah. As long as we're at the stage right now where we are still seeing 40% of randomly sampled domains, tickets are opened, that there is an issue, that's a high percentage of ones to recognize. Now, a modest percentage of those are street addresses which are deemed to be valid by someone looking at them, even though they don't meet the UPO requirements. But that's not a large number.
So then that's comments on the recommendation. Would you like me to read the recommendation again?
Yes, please.
Okay. The ICANN board should direct the ICANN organization to look for potentially anomalous ARS results, example given 40% of IRS-generated tickets closed with no action because the RDS with record changed between the time the ARS report was generated and the time the registration was reviewed by ICANN contractual compliance to determine in cause and take appropriate action to reduce anomalies. First comment is from ALAC. This is a supporting one where they support recommendations for determination of causes of data inaccuracy and actions to be taken to address the inaccuracy. The next one is from RSG, where they wonder what purpose does this serve. The review team seems to draw conclusions from thin air instead of accepting the most reasonable explanation that due to the time lag between the data query in the ARS program and in an eventual compliance review, that the cause is most likely simply the passage of time. The RRSG is of the opinion that recommendations should address actually existing issues that are evidenced by data instead of initiating phishing expeditions. They also note that they consider it highly doubtful that the ARS program can be resumed under the GDPR and other applicable privacy legislation, as it requires ICANN accessing and processing non-public personal information for no valid purpose. And on that, we don't have anything reported on our side.
We certainly had comments on it.
Yeah.
Noting that the recommendation as such is being withdrawn, but we will be recommending something comparable. In terms of, yes, we acknowledge that no one, when we had the first discussion, despite Volker saying there was a time lag, imagined it might be as long as a year and a half from the time the records were pulled till the time that they were inspected. Certainly a year, well, it was not uncommon. So, yes, the time lag was appreciated, but it wasn't. It was known, but it wasn't appreciated at that level. We no longer have the same concerns that were worded in that recommendation. Whether it will ultimately be allowed under GDPR and the EPDP is out of our control. We believe this review team believes there's still a need for such action. Whether it will happen or not is a different matter altogether, obviously. Please.
Yes, I read this. The time lag issue, you mentioned that already, and it will significantly reduce because at one point the reason for the time lag was the operational challenges, enough people to eyeball what they had. So that's out of the way. The issue of the...
On what are you basing that?
Well, they've staffed it up more now.
No, we're talking about today. If the ARS program had not been suspended,
right,
there is a 5 to 6 month lag from the time the records are pulled till
the time that they are addressed.
No, till the time ARS publishes its report. They then go to compliance. Compliance now has 4,000 tickets,
right,
which they ration out because they don't want to overwhelm their staff. So it can take something like 6 months plus. I don't remember the exact number, 6 to 8 months to process those. So we're now talking about potentially over a year. Anyway, certainly over 6 months and could be well over a year till the record is inspected from the time it was pulled.
And my reading of it is a significant improvement on what was historical. They're at least looking at them within 6 months to a year. So that's one thing. But that aside, this RSIG comment says that there is no basis for looking at those records for accuracy. It may not be GDPR compliant. It might be illegal to do that. I would take issue with that. There's still a requirement to have accurate records.
If the ARS program ends up not being something that we can do lawfully, then we will not. We will not. If we don't have access to the data, we can't use it. So that's not a question. That's not under our domain.
I don't follow. I don't get it. You don't have public access, but that doesn't mean
that
they aren't dealing with the data.
That's the point exactly, Stephanie. If we put in place I'm going into EPDP language. If we build a purpose that says ICANN must be able to verify access and must be able to get selected access to contact information to verify its accuracy, and it's proved and part of the EPDP, then it can proceed. If we can't pass that through the EPDP, then it might not happen.
That's actually a processing activity that we don't declare at the moment.
We haven't finished writing all the purposes yet.
Oh, yes, but it's not really a purpose. It's a new processing activity.
The processes are different.
I don't want to get caught up in the language.
The data controller and the data subject are both within the right to ensure that the data is accurate.
Right.
To the extent that ARS...
They have mutual accountability.
Mutual accountability. And
right.
to the...
They may not be. Those mutual accountabilities are not as stringent as the current.
Current ones. Right. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah. I think I'm backing Carlton up on this.
Maybe I'm missing the point you're making. Well, say it again.
Processes aren't processed.
This is about the processing. This is about processing.
Exactly.
There is a processing requirement. It is incumbent on the controller and on the data subject. They have mutual responsibility to ensure that whatever data is kept is accurate. To the extent that ICANN, the data controller, has that data, then the process by which they ensure that the data is accurate is the thing at issue right here, though.
Right, and it has to
has to be proposed.
Problem is, you said ICANN as the controller has the data. Well, it is still subject to debate whether we are a controller, whether we are a joint controller, or whatever.
Okay.
Well, you're talking like you're ICANN hard.
I'm tired.
I know.
And I know you're having fun.
Before change.
The day I am ICANN.org and paid for ICANN.org, I will stop doing this and take the money, because right now I'm not making bugger all. As a typical controller, one would have access to the data. We don't. If we're going to get access to the data, we need a process by which we get the data and a legitimate, lawful purpose for doing it.
Okay.
Right now, that's up in the air.
It's a view. It's a view.
Sure.
I think the only way forward is the way that this has been regulated in the past for decades now, which is that it's incumbent on the registrant to ensure that its data is accurate, and incumbent on the registrar or contracted party at least to ensure the data is corrected by a certain contractual language into their agreements that requires the data to be accurate, to take certain investigative step if notified with evidence that the data they currently hold in store is incorrect. So if a third party comes to us and says, yeah, the data you don't have on that data subject is incorrect, then we will investigate if that is substantiated in any form or shape. For example, proof of a returned letter or something like that. Otherwise, we will not go out of, we would not go out of our way to ensure that data is correct because we have no indication incorrect. If we have an indication that it's incorrect, of course we will do whatever is on the And I think that is all the GDPR asks us to do as data processors.
No one is arguing with that. I mean, we could ask you to audit all of your records, but we haven't so far. No, ICANN.org. The we is whoever I wanted to be in that sentence. Catherine.
Right, we. This is Catherine.
We're going downhill fast here.
Just to reiterate what I said yesterday to this point, which was to reiterate the union position taken in January, the European Union, which basically says that, of course, accuracy is something that is defined in relation to the purposes for which the data are collected, and that all steps need to be taken to ensure accuracy and data quality in respect of the purposes. And whether or not that requires more proactive measures or just sitting on data until somebody tells you it's incorrect, I'm not sure we should venture as far. But I think it would not hurt to say that there is a more general, in response to this comment, that data quality is not just a requirement that requires companies to respond to complainants by data subjects, but it is
we have further discussion on this point, or may we go on to the next one?
And next one is from NCSG. The Revit team has done great work in compiling the work that I done on registrant rights and responsibilities, and this report will be a good resource document for those who attempt to fix this problem. However, this very detailed section should remain a resource for this future work. We do not see the merit in developing new accuracy recommendations when the entire data set for publication is about to change. NCHD recommends removing this recommendation unless, as your footnote indicates, something arises which merits further action. And on that, so the data, that data will not be published is irrelevant. The data will be lawfully available by some means, and it is for those who will have access that the accuracy matters, and Catherine will include citations from GDPR that will address this.
Further comments? Next. So at this stage, the recommendation is being withdrawn. A replacement recommendation will reiterate the need for continued diligence on regarding accuracy, and we'll be recommending that the ARS or something comparable be continued. Goodbye, Chris. Next on the agenda. I'm hoping it's going to show up by tomorrow morning. But do you wish to contend or disagree with the intent of the recommendation, not seeing the wording? concern with the wording, is there an overall intent? Please go ahead.
Please understand that our objections are not so much to the concept of accuracy, it's the response burden and the consequences for the end user in the case of inaccurate data. That's what our comment. So yeah, if we can reword this, it's great.
By the end user you mean?
The registrant.
Some of us mean something very different by end user.
I know. I refer to people who harvest the data for their purposes as third-party users, just to be clear.
Any further comments? Seeing none. Next item on our agenda.
No other items on the agenda, Ellen. We've covered all the recommendations. We have now re-reviewed the data accuracy section since Stephanie originally wasn't part of the conversation. At this point in time, we don't have anything else on the agenda, but it's up to you to decide if there's anything further needs to be done.
It's 4:30 right now. I'm happy to adjourn and anyone who chooses to stay in the room and work on any joint efforts, they certainly may for, I'm presuming, Jean-Baptiste, you're going to be here for a little while?
Yep.
Okay. And barring that, we will reconvene at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and being prepared to wrap up this whole show before we leave.
Thank you, Ellen. I also wanted to note that some of our action the past 2 days resulted in language that some of the review team members are going to help provide references to Jackie so the report can be updated. So tomorrow, since everyone is here, might be a good time for her to carve out some time and sit down with individuals who need to provide references, links, or specific language for those recommendations that we need to update before we end the day.
And could I ask, Lily, you said those numbers the registrar has quoted in their overall statement on 5.1 come from the ARS reports. If you could provide me with a few URLs or something like that, that would be useful, or pointers to them. Thank you.
I even have the full report in my hand.
Then you can give it to me.
Thank you.